You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com and the Pewter Report podcast. Happy Tuesday to everybody joining in the chat at the moment. Shout out to all the Pewter people. Got a fun topic today, talking about the trenches, which is a position and a group that Bucks general manager Jason Light, I think, loves more than most. As we talk about today, did the Bucks really upgrade their offensive line? They've made some moves over the past couple of days, signing new additions Ben Bredesen, previously of the Giants, and as you see on the caption there, Sua Opeta from the Eagles. They also re-signed Justin School. So we'll get into all of those moves, talk about the Bucks offensive line and how they fare going into this season. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me is my fellow co-host and the face that runs the place at PewterReport.com, SR Scott Reynolds. Scott, how we doing?
Doing good. Happy Tuesday to everyone. And we're inching closer to the draft now. Today is Tuesday, March 19th, and the NFL draft is in 5 weeks. It's coming up quickly. So we'll have a chance to talk to Lavonte David on Friday. We have a press conference to cover. So it'll be a while before we talk about that on the Pewter Report podcast, because remember, there is no Pewter Report podcast next Monday. We're going to be traveling to Orlando for the NFL owners meeting, otherwise known as the NFL annual meeting right now. And we'll talk to Todd Bowles. So that'll be fun. That'll be Monday. Actually, we'll be driving to Orlando on Monday. The NFL owners dinner is that night. And then Tuesday morning, bright and early, we'll be talking to Todd Bowles and then having a podcast on Tuesday, wrapping that up. So, but today we're talking offensive line. And if you remember, we had Graham Barton in our last mock draft. That's the Duke offensive lineman, played left tackle. We'll project inside to either guard or center at the next level. And will Graham Barton make it back in the Bucks mock draft? We're having our mock draft reveal tomorrow. That'll be on PewterReport.com. And we're spending tomorrow's show breaking down all of the selections. It'll be more exciting this time because there's 2 third-round picks, Matt.
Yeah, an extra one right there. And a little bit more of a clear pathway of where the Bucks are going to be going. And that's just by nature of both getting intel at the combine, talking to a number of players, and of course, free agency with the move the Bucks did make, most notably re-signing a lot of their guys. But again, signing someone like Jordan Whitehead kind of tells you that the Bucks aren't going to go safety with their their first round pick. So all the mock drafts are great. The first that you've done have been entertaining, insightful. But I think this one, I think, will tell much more of a picture of where Tampa Bay is going with the draft 5 weeks away, as you said.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking offensive line today. The Bucks, of course, made some moves, as Matt mentioned, Ben Bredesen and
Sua Opeta.
Sua Opeta. Thank you. Sua Opeta from the Eagles. Those are the two newest offensive linemen, interior offensive linemen. And the Buccaneers also re-signed Brandon Walton at the beginning of free agency and most recently Justin School. So are these depth moves, or could we see Opetta or Ben Bredesen in the starting lineup? Well, as of right now, they're penciled in as the starter. But remember, there was the time when Kyle Trask was the starter by default in Tampa before the Bucs signed Baker Mayfield last year. I remember when Dave Canales was brought in, Kyle Trask was the only quarterback on the roster.
That's right.
Tom Brady had retired, and the team had moved on from Ryan Griffin and had yet to sign John Wolford. So it was kind of like Kyle Trask was the starter by default. That's certainly not the case. And I think the Bucs are going to be signing some, or I should say drafting some offensive linemen. I would not be surprised if at the end of the day, Opetta and Bredesen are backup players in Tampa. And that's not a bad thing, because they're going to get a chance to compete, but they're on 1 year deals. I don't think this team spent a whole bunch of money on them, kind of like maybe in that Matt Filer role last year. But Matt, when you look at the offensive line, let's start and just kind of get some things out of the way for housekeeping duties here.
Sure.
It starts outside, right, with the offensive tackles, and the Buccaneers have two upper echelon outside tackles, starting with an elite tackle, and that's Tristan Wirfs, the Pro Bowler, who I think will get back to playing at an all-pro level when he's healthier next year and when he's entering year two at that more comfortable now left tackle position. And he's also going to be a father too. And he and his girlfriend, Meredith, timed it perfect where they can have the child in the off season. So diaper duties and all of that stuff should be kind of out of the way, or at least second fiddle by the time he gets to training camp. It's not going to be too much of a burden for him from a familial aspect.
Yeah. If anything, I mean, I'm not a father, so I can't imagine that adjustment. But I know Tristan had a big adjustment last year going into training camp, because he was moving from right tackle to left tackle.
Yeah.
Now he's got to go through an entire life adjustment. Now, obviously, this is a very happy thing. He's welcoming his first child into the world.
I think any day now, right?
Yeah. I remember him saying the due date was like middle of March. And then Baker Mayfield said during his press conference that him and Tristan – their due dates, because Baker also has a baby on the way, they're a week
with
apart.
With Emily, yeah.
Yeah. So it does seem like it's going to be any day now that there's going to be a new Wirfs and a new Mayfield.
I know. Exciting.
In the world, which is very exciting. But,
and again, they timed it just right in the offseason.
Not
during the season. If they're worried about missing a game or whatever. So
I imagine he'll be lacking a lot of sleep for the next couple of months. But good to get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Now, in March and April and May. So by the time mandatory OTAs come out and training camp and all that fun stuff, there won't be I don't know. I can't speak for him. And like I said, I don't have any kids, but the initial adjustment, I believe, of parenthood will already happen for Tristan Wirfs. And then he can kind of focus on the season and playing at an all-pro level and maybe playing with some more money in his pocket, depending on if they get that extension done.
I agree. And the move from right tackle to left tackle was not the only adjustment on the offensive line. Of course,
correct,
we're talking about Luke Getteke moving from left guard, where it wasn't so great, to right tackle, where, boom, it was really good. It was a nice adjustment and a nice pleasant surprise for most of us. Didn't expect Getteke to just absolutely wow at right tackle, but he did. And I think, like Wirfs, will only get better in year two at that position, Matt. You have to look at his adjustment to right tackle, which was the spot that Getteke played for 2 years at Central Michigan, and in year two at right tackle in Tampa Bay, I think is going to be better, and it's going to be more of an at ease heading into year two with the confidence that he can make this jump. He's already done it for 17 games.
Yeah, I think maybe it was like a month or so ago, these podcasts, they go by so fast. And I mean that in a great way, because time flies when you're having fun. When we gave out accolades for the Bucs offense and things like that, I believe Luke Getteke, if he wasn't most improved, he was certainly in the running for it. And, I'm not always trying to compare last season to this season as well. Yeah. But if you remember last year, there was a big gamble going into this season with the Bucs offensive line. It was hopefully Luke Goedeke works out at right tackle, because he struggled heavily, at guard. Hopefully Ryan Jensen is feeling better and can be an everyday starter. As we learned, that was not the case. So it was back to Robert Hainsey. And hey, let's cross our fingers and hope that Cody Mauch, a starting rookie at guard, won't have the same experience that Luke Goedeke had starting at guard, which I think that was very much the case. And Mauch held his own. But yeah, for Goedeke, year two at right tackle. I mean, what an absolute blessing it was for the Bucs that Luke Goedeke not only just like held his own at right tackle, but played at a very high level. And I just think the confidence is only going to grow that much more playing at that position. I think the bond that he's built with Tristan Wirfs, like they're lifting buddies. I mean, we were all there, Scott, for the Baker Mayfield press conference, like we just talked about a minute ago.
Right.
Tristan Wirfs and Luke Goedeke were in the back watching the press conference and asking Baker Mayfield to lift. Obviously, part of that was in jest, but I mean, they're just working out every single day. I don't know how much bigger and stronger they could possibly get, but I mean, damn it, they're going to try they can. And I mean, I only see better things coming for Luke Goedeke. He's got another year under his belt, full season starting at right tackle. And I remember Jason Light, I don't remember which press conference it was, but he said like, hey, don't rule out Luke Goedeke at guard. But he was so good at tackle. Like, I don't know. Why ruin a good thing? You know, you really got two anchors with Wirfs, specifically with Wirfs, but certainly with Goedeke. And Tristan Wirfs was the first one to hype up Luke Goedeke about all the pass rushing matchups that he went up against last season and did very well.
Started with Danielle Hunter, you know, in week one. Cameron Jordan, week two.
Week after week after week, you know, obviously teams are going to get smart and say, hey, well, it's probably a stalemate if we put our best pass rusher against Tristan Wirfs, because Tristan Wirfs is arguably the greatest left tackle in the league. So why not try our chances against Luke Goedeke? And Luke Goedeke answered the bell time after time. So I'm very excited for what he can do this year.
Yeah, actually, Cam Jordan was week four. That was in New Orleans. But then he shut out Hassan Reddick in week three.
Yeah.
When they lost to the Eagles. So, yeah. So the good news for the Buccaneers, their tackles, the starting tackles are set this year. And I think they've also done a really good job of addressing the swing tackle with Justin School, who is better than Joe Haig, is better than Josh Wells, in my opinion. I think he's a little bit of an upgrade over those two players. So I think Jason Light and John Spytek and Mike Bielan and the scouts have done a better job of upgrading that swing tackle and just kind of elevating the base play, if you will, raising the floor of the offensive line.
Yeah.
And I also think that they've done that in the interior as well, because if you look here in this graphic and if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, this was the culprits right here. This was the interior offensive line. Not good. Matt Filer at left guard, and it was replaced by Aaron Stinney. Robert Hainsey at center, who is average at best. And then Cody Mauch, who showed some real promise, had some highlight plays, has a pretty good future, I think, in this league, and just was a left tackle who played at North Dakota State and a right guard who played in the NFL. And that's a tough transition. And Luke Goedeke made that transition look really, really bad when he did it from right tackle in college to left guard. I actually think Cody Mauch was better in terms of his transition. And I would say it was probably a slightly better than Alex Kappa's transition from left tackle at Humboldt State a couple years ago into right guard, but not as seamless as Ali Marpet's transition from left tackle at Hobart College to right guard in the NFL. So I put Mauch somewhere in between Marpet and Kappa. And I think that he will end up being better than Kappa in this league and probably not as good as Marpet, but time will tell. But these three guys here, they've already replaced Filer. I think they're looking to replace Robert Hainsey. I think Robert Hainsey ideally is a good backup center. And I think he's done yeoman's work. I think you know, Hainsey has held his own. He has not been he's not been a liability, but he's somebody that you look at and say, you're the weak link outside of left guard, right? If you shore up left guard, let's say you get a Graham Barton. in the first round, or, you know, another type player like Cody Mauch in the early rounds. Hainsey's probably a guy that you're looking to upgrade at center. I just think he's kind of maxed out. He's a smart player, and I think that's where he brings value, Matt, is he's a high IQ player, but he's not the biggest guy. You don't want him one-on-one in pass protection. He's going to get driven back,
yeah,
and he doesn't bring nearly as much punch as Ryan Jensen did in the run game, and certainly not the attitude that Jensen had. It's been a big drop-off at center from Ryan Jensen to Robert Hainsey.
Yeah, I always felt this offseason that the Bucs were looking to replace two starters on the offensive line, and specifically the interior O-line with Robert Hainsey and you know, whoever's going to play left guard next to Tristan Wirfs over at left tackle. And you look at you talk about Mauch and you look at Hainsey, and I think the difference between the two is, you know, Mauch was a rookie, and you watch his film and you see him play every week. And sure, there are moments where he got driven back too, or got annihilated along the line of scrimmage. But he would also have those moments where he depleted a linebacker or got the better of a defensive tackle on a play. With Robert Hainsey, you just never really saw that. You saw a lot of the bad and, you know, losing pass rushing or pass blocking reps and things of that nature, but you never saw the, like, oh my God, Robert Hainsey, what a great pancake, or wow, look the way that Hainsey really sealed off the player on this specific run play, or whatever the case may be. So with Mauch, you're still of the belief and the feeling that he can take another step forward, because I agree. I mean, he's way ahead of what Gedeki was as a rookie, not there yet of Ali Marpet, but I think he's well on his way. And I think the best thing the Bucs can do is keep Cody Mauch in that same right guard position and not really toy with the idea of moving him to center or something like that, which we've had discussions about. With Hainsey, you're looking for his replacement, but I think it's almost more important to figure out what happens with left guard, because I think doomsday scenario, whatever, you still have Hainsey in there at center, and fine, you can deal with it, you can work with it, because as you said, not truly a liability, but clearly there's room for improvement. And that's what makes this draft very interesting, what Tampa Bay will do on the interior offensive line, because they do have options in-house now with Bredesen and Opetta. Yeah. And I'm curious how the Bucs really view it, because, yes, they are replacing Aaron Stinney. Nick Leverett's not there anymore. He signed with the Patriots. So it is a little bit of a changing of the guard, no pun intended, with a lot of these new faces in the offensive line room. And Bredesen started 16 games last season, and all over the interior O-line. Played at left guard, 189 snaps, 346 snaps at center, and 479 at right guard. So we're talking, if he's a backup, I mean, that's a backup with a lot of experience and a lot of versatility. Opetta played in 13 games, I believe started in six or nine, something like that. So does have that starting experience as well, but seems a little more fitted for to be a backup. But it does feel like, let's just say hypothetically, they draft the Jackson Powers Johnson or Grant Barden and put them in. Do we have a couple of guys competing for center along with Hainsey? Or if JPJ is drafted, obviously he goes to center. Does Robert Hainsey go into that guard mix now? Because there are options. I don't know how much of an upgrade it is over like Filer and Stinney. I mean, just looking at the PFF grades, Ben Bredesen last year overall had a 42 PFF grade, 42 in pass blocking, 41 in run blocking. Opetta was actually better, had a 53 overall grade, 57, pretty much 58 in pass blocking, 50 and a half in run blocking. So, you know, it's tough to find great starting offensive guards and offensive linemen in free agency that you're not spending a ton of money on like other teams had this offseason. Do I ultimately overall think it is an upgrade? Yeah, I would say a bit of an upgrade, because Filer was more of like an aging guy, had some injury issues. Happened to him again this season, where Bredesen and Opetta, I think you get a little bit more of that versatility and a little bit
A little bit more punch, a little bit more power, right? Stinney got overpowered a little bit. He was better on the move as a pulling guard and running some of those concepts than he was at the point of attack. I mean, you can just see the difference right there between Tristan Wirfs. Now he's a huge monster, right? But I mean, Aaron Stinney looks small by comparison, right? And really kind of on par with a guy like Robert Hainsey, just not the biggest center out there. Nick Leverett kind of the same way, right? Not a huge guy by any means, scrappy player. But I just think when you look at the strength that Opeta brings to the table, I mean, the 39 bench press reps is no joke. He's a power player, and I think that he can make some things happen in the running game. It wasn't all him, just like it, you know, you have Tristan Wirfs, who's a tremendous run blocker, yet Tampa Bay's ground game is ranked second to last. It's not all Tristan's fault. So I want to preface what I'm going to say, where the running game is not just offensive line men, it's offensive line men across the board, plus the tight ends, the backs, the running, you know, the running backs hitting the holes, receivers in the perimeter blocking, et cetera, et cetera. But you look at where these guys came from. Opeta from Philadelphia, guess what? They can run the ball. They had the ninth best rushing attack in the league last year at 124 yards. The year prior, they were, the third ranked unit, 152 yards behind only Chicago and Atlanta in Baltimore. So they were fourth actually in 2022, but they were ninth last year. So Philly can run the ball. The Giants, when Saquon Barkley was healthy, they could also run the ball. Mm-hmm. The Giants had the 16th ranked rushing attack, 110 yards per game. And the year before that, 146 yards on the ground per game. So Bredesen, it's interesting. He's a bigger dude. I mean, he started with the Baltimore Ravens. We have a picture of when the Ravens there, but very short arms, 31 inch arms. So he's going to see some time, I think, at center more so than guard. I think Opeta probably has the best chance at starting at guard initially. We'll see who they draft. But if you look at this graphic here, the Bucs offensive line depth chart, it kind of shakes out this way. Right now they've got, I believe, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. They've got 11 offensive linemen here on the roster. Lou Gehrke, Tristan Wirfs, those are the starting tackles. Right now, Robert Hainsey at center, Cody Malk at right guard. And then the two new names are in red. Sua Opeta at left guard. Ben Bredesen will get a shot right now at left guard as well, but will also compete at center because I think that he's probably better suited to play there than Hainsey is. But I would not be surprised if this team drafts two offensive linemen this year, one that can play center and one that can play guard. And some of the names that you've already mentioned, Matt, guess what? Jackson Powers Johnson can play guard. He can also play center. He was a center last year for Oregon and also played some guard at the Senior Bowl as well as center, but he was a guard before he was a center at Oregon. And it's interesting because in a lot of mocks, you're seeing him getting drafted before Tampa Bay picks at number 26. Mel Kiper Jr., think what you want of him. I have a lot of respect for Mel. He's done this a long time, longer than I have. He doesn't have Jackson Powers Johnson in the first round in any of his mocks. Maybe that's just an old man omission and he's slipping a little bit. Or maybe he knows something that the rest of the mock drafters don't. But stranger things have happened. But that's one candidate there. Then you look at a guy like Graham Barton from Duke, and he started 5 games during his freshman season at Duke at center, and then has projected to being a guard or center at the next level. And so Graham Barton is a player that has some experience playing center at Duke, but then also has the ability with the athleticism to play tackle on a pinch, but probably more likely to move inside and play some guard.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the possibility of of the Bucs drafting two offensive linemen in this year's draft, because that actually came across my mind as well. And I was thinking, well, I mean, it would be in tune with what Jason Light does with drafting the same position several times in April when it goes down. And it would be very similar to when they picked up Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith in the same draft. So this isn't anything new for Jason Light. He's done it with the cornerback position as well. And he'll do it as many times as he possibly can. Those are obviously the two big names on the board.
And you know what? You're right. And that's important to kind of note here, too, because if you look at this graphic again, the Bucs offensive line depth chart, right? So worst case scenario, Ben Bredesen is a backup center, and he's better than Nick Leverett, right? And let's say Hainsey is the true backup, right? Because Leverett could also play guard and center. So he was kind of the swing guy. So Hainsey's the backup center. Or maybe you trade Hainsey. I don't know. But but Bredesen could be the guy. If he beats out Hainsey, then maybe you move Hainsey or whatever. But Hainsey's in the last year of his contract. Siua Opeta, he would be an upgrade over backup Aaron Stinney. Right. So you've raised the floor at offensive line. These guys would be better backups than what we saw last year in Tampa with Leverett and Stinney, who ultimately replaced Filer as the starter. Now, here's the big question, though. Ideally speaking, do you want to have an interior offensive line, Matt, that has a rookie center, a rookie left guard, and a second-year right guard? Those are three pretty green players in front of your $33 million quarterback in Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and you're kind of banking on, oh, Jackson Powers Johnson, he's great. He's going to be the guy. But as we've seen, I mean, Joe Tryon-Shanka, we were kind of raising the roof for JTS when he got drafted by the Bucs. And that's a lot to ask. That's a lot to kind of hope for with the Bucs.
Not a strategy, right? but at the same time, it can be done. Tristan Wirfs.
Sure. Yes,
it's a proven. Pro Bowler,
it's proven in Tampa as well.
Yeah.
I would also kind of argue that hope, rolling the dice, whatever you want to call it, the Bucs, kind of like what I said earlier, rolled the dice last year with, hey, we're going to go with Cody Mauch and Robert Hainsey. We didn't really have a choice because the Ryan Jensen thing was unfortunate as it is. They got lucky last year with the Gedeke move and Mauch being what he is now.
Right.
Tough to roll the dice once again. So, I mean, I'm all for drafting two, but maybe not inserting one right away to be a starter. You know,
Jason Light's done this before. In 2015, as you mentioned, Matt, they drafted in the second round Donovan Smith and then traded up with their third round pick back into the second to get Ali Marpet. Both of those guys started in front of the first overall pick, Jameis Winston, right? So
sure, but like that was a completely different team. Like that, it was a very different team. This is a team that's trying to make the playoffs again.
Totally agree. I'm just saying that like that was an important move, right? To draft a quarterback number one overall, and then to kind of have the balls to stick two rookie offensive linemen in front of him. But Marpet was good, and Donovan Smith was okay as a rookie, right? And they developed into really good players. I will say this. Jackson Powers Johnson is the closest thing I've seen, and I've even talked to some offensive line gurus like Brandon Thorne from Trench Warfare, who we know and has been on the program before. Yeah, friend of the show. And, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson is the closest thing to Ryan Jensen. Okay, he just is. And Graham Barton is the closest thing to Ali Marpet. So if you can come away with one of those guys in the first round. Oh, and by the way, Jason Light does have an extra third round pick. Mm-hmm. To maybe make a move up there. We've seen him move up one spot to get Tristan Wirfs. So it was worth it. Yeah. So don't think that Jason Light, if a Ali Marpet 2.0, if a Ryan Jensen 2.0 was within reach, I think he would in this year's draft go ahead and make a move to get up there. And Matt, I think the reason why he would feel comfortable doing that is because this team has been so active in free agency, not just re-signing their own players, but shoring up some positions, especially in the secondary, to where if you do burn a premium draft pick, like a third rounder, you know, you're not missing out on a starting caliber player. Like you said, you got your starting strong safety. You got your number three cornerback. You've got maybe your nickel cornerback if Tabir Thomas beats out Christian Isian.
Not only do I think that the Bucs might draft or trade up to draft one of the two guys you mentioned, I think they absolutely should. Like, if this is the clear weakness of your offensive line, to your point, Scott, they brought back Baker. They brought back Mike Evans. Like, why have everything else intact but say, the offensive line needs some work. Go get a stud. And then still, if you want to draft another one later, I don't think there's any shame in drafting a second offensive lineman. Sure. And he doesn't start right away, and he can kind of You can mold him. You can let him progress. And then in a season or two from now, they become a starter and you feel much, much better about it. I think that probably should be the way that the Bucks go about this draft, especially if it's, you know, if you're at 26 and it comes down to Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, or like an edge rusher that you don't totally love. And, you know, we don't really love the edge rusher group this year. Like if it's JPJ or Chop Robinson, I think it's a no brainer. It's JPJ, in that type of situation. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, a big thing they need to improve is the run game, because as we were talking about, it was pretty bad again last season. We got this super chat from Paul Bowen. Thank you, Paul, for the $4.99 super chat. Talking about running back specifically, says, what kind of running back should the Bucks draft, if any? I'm a biased Troy fan, but Kamani Vidal seems like a steal. I had him in my mock draft.
Love him.
He should go late and has been a fan favorite in Alabama.
Yeah, I love him. We are going to have the Bucks draft a running back in the seventh round in our mock draft tomorrow. One of my favorite running backs, and I think he'll be there. Running backs always typically slide unless you get a generational talent or, you know, a team that is just really having to fill some holes on their depth chart. I think Tampa Bay, they got away with having Chase Edmonds as the backup last year. We saw them, you know, thankfully cut Keyshawn Vaughn probably a year too late, but better late than never. I just didn't think much of Vaughn when he was here at all. And then, you know, Sean Tucker still around. This will be a big offseason for him. He's really got to take a big leap. And maybe having a fresh start with the new offense, a new offensive coordinator might help out as well. But I think you can find running backs later in the draft on day three and being productive. You can roll through the list. And, you know, Kansas City's running back. Yep. Isaac Pacheco, Ivan Pacheco is he's a stud. And he was a seventh round pick out of Rutgers. So you can find good running backs later in the draft. I've got no problem taking him as early as the third round. We had Ray Davis in our last mock draft, but we're saving one for the seventh round. And I think that you're just looking for a guy to kind of be that complement. Rashad White showed, especially down the stretch, he could really be a workhorse back and a three down back, first, second, and third down with his ability to catch the ball. So I do like Kamani Vidal. If they spent, say, they don't have a fifth round pick, but a sixth or seventh round pick on him, I would be thrilled with that. I just don't think he's going to be there. I think he's probably a fourth or fifth round pick.
I think the Bucks absolutely have to bring in another running back. You can't go into training camp with Rashad White, Chase Edmonds, and Sean Tucker as your main.
Agreed.
You absolutely need. So, and I'm fine if the Bucks like want to look at another veteran just to push like the whole room and you draft another running back.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, competition, I think makes everybody better, makes every football player better. So for the part of the question, that's like what type of running back, I think that's very interesting as well, because Rashad White is an interesting running back, just his game. Like he is physical, but he's not like an overpowering like A.J. Dillon or Brandon Jacobs back in the day, but he's not lightning quick either.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you want another bruising type of running back, a little more powerful, maybe a bit helpful in short yardage situations, even though I do think Rashad White is not bad in short yardage situations? Or do you just want a lightning quick, hey, if he hits the hole, if there's even a small semblance of an opening, he's going to hit it and he's going to be off to the races and maybe get some more of those 30 to 40 yard runs that we haven't seen in a couple of years from the Buccaneers. Like a lot of the big plays Rashad White has had has really been through the passing game with
big
yardage plays. Like he's had some nice screen plays and things like that. Nothing wrong there, but I'm just curious if the Bucs want to look at kind of a home run hitter that they haven't necessarily had at running back for quite a while.
It was really a position that, you know, to our knowledge, they only spent two formal interviews with. That was Kentucky running back Ray Davis, who obviously Liam Cohen knows. And then South Carolina and USC running back Marshawn Lloyd. He spent time at both USC schools, South Carolina and Southern California. The other running backs that the Buccaneers interviewed, but informally at the combine, were Wisconsin's Braylon Allen, Georgia's Kendall Milton, Missouri's Cody Schrader, South Dakota State running back Isaiah Davis, Troy running back Kamani Badal, New Hampshire running back Dylan Laub, Ohio State running back Mayan Williams, Louisville running back Juwar Johnson, who I spent some time watching some film on today. Very interesting guy, very explosive type running back. Clemson running back Will Shipley, TCU running back Imani Bailey, and Boise State running back George Halani. So there's some interesting names on that list. I think it's probably going to be a day three selection just because the Bucs have pressing needs elsewhere. And I'm just watching the Amazon truck pull up, and you know what that means. Today is Celsius Day at the Reynolds household. Matt, I'm happy camper now. It's 4:36, and I got a Celsius I'm going to have in the morning already.
That is fantastic. Yeah, shout out to Celsius, the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast. You know, I was thinking this running back that the Bucs need to get, if it is a home run hitter, something that can kind of help expedite that process of hitting the hole and being off to the races in the end zone is by having a Celsius energy drink before the game. And check out their newest line of product, the Celsius Essentials, which they are the tall boys. They're a little bit bigger than your typical Celsius energy drink. They got 270 milligrams of caffeine. If you need to know where to find a Celsius Essential, check out their flavors like the Blue Crush and the Dragonberry. Or you want to find an original flavor, could be the sparkling watermelon, the Arctic vibe, tropical vibe, or maybe the strawberry lemonade. Some great flavors available at Celsius. Go to the store locator on the Celsius website, punch in your address, and it'll tell you the closest location where you can pick one up. Might be a Walmart, might be a health and fitness store, 7-Eleven, or your bodega.
Bodega.
And once you keep going to your bodega and you're like, wow, I love the Celsius. It's great, but I need to get it in bulk so I'm not making 1,000 trips. We got you. You can buy it in bulk over on Amazon, as you heard Scott mention, the Amazon truck pulling up. Get that variety pack because variety is the spice of life. You can have all the great flavors of Celsius. But the cool thing is, as well, is with the subscribe and save on Amazon, you can have it sent to your place of residence whenever you want. Could be a week, could be a month. Have a monthly Celsius day. And just make sure you're drinking Celsius energy drinks, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. It's draft season, so make Celsius your number one pick.
Yep. Some comments here. Ray Davis is going to be 25 this year. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. He spent years at Temple, I think 2 years there, 2 years at Vanderbilt, and then a year at Kentucky. And he's not going to be in our next mock draft. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a Bucs best bet either. So we have a little bit of intel there. So just a little heads up about that. So, just because they interview you at the combine, or just because they have you in for a top 30 visit, doesn't mean the visit goes well. Doesn't mean the interview goes well either. Right. So keep that in mind. Sometimes those visits, those interviews, they can change things. Sometimes you might go in liking a player and come out loving a player. Sometimes you might go in liking a player and then not liking a player based upon that interaction. And sometimes you're just stealthy like Jason Light was last year, and you draft Kalijah Kansi, who you didn't interview at all in the pre-draft process. So you relied on your area scouts doing the homework at Pitt. No top 30 visit, no combine interview. It was crazy. Jason Light was very stealthy last year, and we'll see if that was the case. We have a couple comments here that kind of really caught my eye here. Kieran Butt says, it's a shame the JPJ will more than likely be gone before 26. I think he will. I think that's the case. But as Matt mentioned earlier, trading up's a possibility. And I think that I would be all in favor of that. He's the type of player you go up and get. And he is a tone setter up front. And kind of picking up what Zoya says here, would love some Jensen attitude back, but that guy was one of a kind. But Matt, as we saw at the Senior Bowl, he was only out there for a day or two, but Jackson Powers Johnson brought the power. And in his interviews, you could tell this was the kind of guy who's a bit of an ass kicker.
Yeah, like his interviews almost reminded me a little bit of Jason Kelsey, who plays center, just in the sense of like so comfortable, very easygoing. And, not every player is like that, especially as a college prospect where you're not in front of the media as much as you are when you become an NFL player. But just the way he was so free flowing and talked about like the art of being an offensive lineman, I thought was great. And I mean, he's got the guts too, because he was dealing with a little bit of a hamstring injury and still went out and did the individual drill so we could show what he can do as a pass blocker in one-on-one drills and still obviously dominated during that session. So he kind of checks a lot of the boxes. Obviously, the tape speaks for itself, but the person that I'm not going to say we know personally, but the person that we got to talk
to
interview
him a couple times.
So those things a little bit, I think, help really paint the whole picture. I'm getting all about art today, I guess, but paint the whole picture about, you know, these prospects. And obviously JPJ is a name we've talked about for a while, and I think the Bucks would absolutely love to have him. It's just whether or not he'll be available, because you look at a couple teams in front of the Bucks, the Eagles, who the Bucks beat, the Cowboys, who lost Seahawks, in the first round as well, Seahawks too. So a couple of teams that I think could be looking for a center in those 20 plus picks on in the first round. And only so many options, right?
I agree. Just to pick up on Matt's point earlier, which was a great one, maybe draft two offensive linemen this year. Tobias Stark has the same line of thinking. Should the Bucks go for a center or again for a guard and then draft at the draft? And if so, you know, round one or two. Well, there are a couple other names to keep in mind. And again, remember, Jason Light is very fond of, and it's worked out usually pretty well. I think Luke Getteke might be the lone exception, but it's worked out pretty well getting some more athletic tackles and then moving those players inside. And there's a couple of other names to kind of keep in mind. The Buccaneers, I'll read off these names. They spent, as we uncovered, Matt, at the NFL scouting combine, they spent 10 of their 45 formal interviews on offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And these are the players that they had formal interviews with at the combine. Jackson Powers Johnson, Graham Barton, Kansas offensive tackle Dominic Puny, Arizona offensive tackle Jordan Morgan, Oregon State offensive lineman Talese Fuaga, Notre Dame offensive lineman, he played right tackle, Blake Fisher. Joe Alt was the left tackle, but Blake Fisher was the right tackle. Remember, Robert Hainsey played right tackle at Notre Dame. They moved him inside to center. Washington offensive lineman Troy Fatanu, and he was a left tackle. There was some consideration he might be moved into guard, but he showed so well with the movement and the drills at the combine that he could be an undersized athletic left tackle. UConn guard Christian Haynes, Oklahoma right tackle Tyler Guyton, and Kansas State guard Cooper Beebe. So those are the players that they had those formal interviews with. And it's interesting because you look at a guy like Tanner Bordellini, who was an informal interview. This is a center who has been getting quite a bit of interest from Tampa Bay, just had his pro day, and the Bucks were kind of spending a lot of time with him up there. He could be an interesting day three center. And again, Senior Bowl prospect, checks the box there. Struggled a little bit in one-on-ones, but had a really good game at the Senior Bowl. And I know him being a Wisconsin guy that our own Adam Slabon would approve of that move should the Buccaneers draft him. Another guy, also with the Senior Bowl, Dominic Puny. Yes, that's one of the ugliest helmets in the world. That's right, the Kansas Jayhawks, my arch rival. But listen, this guy's a player, and he played left tackle last year at Kansas, has not allowed a sack the last 2 years. The year before that was a guard, and I think that's where he projects at the next level. He is a guard, and he also snapped the ball, Matt, at the Senior Bowl, which we saw. So he can play center, he can play guard. One of those guys that kind of has some position flexibility, like Graham Barton, can play guard, can play center. Another guy that probably doesn't have as much flexibility, he's just more of a guard, but that's Christian Haynes. Again, another Senior Bowl prospect, Matt. This team has milked the Senior Bowl for offensive linemen before. Alex Kappa, Robert Hainsey, Cody Mauch,
Kayvon Merriweather.
Well, I'm
just you're talking about offensive line.
Donovan Smith, Ali Marpet. So all these guys we're mentioning, and Graham Barton was supposed to be at the offensive, or supposed to be at the Senior Bowl. He had to withdraw because of he was nursing an injury. He had to get that ready for the combine. But Barton was supposed to be at the Senior Bowl. So you throw him into the mix. You throw Jackson Powers Johnson in the mix. Yeah, this team could draft certainly one, if not two, Senior Bowl offensive linemen for sure.
The draft starts in Mobile, as they say, and the Bucs have certainly found that recipe going to Mobile and seeing a lot of these offensive linemen. This position is a little bit of offensive lineman, but a little bit of receiver as well. We're talking tight ends because we got the super chat from Cali Bucs. Thank you, Cali Bucs, for the $4.99 super chat, who says, would the Bucs upgrade the tight end position early? On is good, but not great. An all-around tight end would be huge for the offense. We show our hand with Otten. Very, very compelling case. Because, Scott, you wrote an article the other day about Cade Otten. And I think my favorite part of your article was kind of pointing out a little bit of a difference in the offense that Liam Cohen is going to run with having a lot more just 11 personnel versus 12 personnel, which is 11 personnel is one tight end. 12 personnel is two tight ends.
Yeah.
13 is three tight ends. And, you know, Cohen talked about that. Cade Otten was on the field like 98% of the time. He was never off of the field. And he talked a little bit about kind of just limiting his reps a little bit so he's not, you know, exhausted by the end of the game and by the end of the season. And with the fact that the Bucs might not be playing as much 12 personnel with two tight ends on the field, that means whoever is tight end two is going to get a couple of more looks and a couple of more options. Yeah. Now, in-house for the Bucs at tight end, you have Cade Otten, you have Payne Durham, who you heard Todd Bowles and Jason Light talk about a lot at the combine, that they're confident in him taking the next step next season. We'll see if that, you know, really comes to fruition. Then you got Cole Kieft, who at this point is more of a glorified fullback than he is a tight end, as he had one catch on the season, though it was four touchdowns. So I think addressing tight end for the Bucs, they can go with another rookie and go in the draft this year. Obviously, Ben Sinnott is a guy that you've paid a lot of close attention to. Emwa, go Wildcats.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel, and I'm not against that by any means.
Right.
I just kind of feel like this is still an extremely young group at tight end. You know, Otten's only going into his third year. Durham's in his second year. Cole Kieft also going to his third year with Otten. I just feel like having a true blue veteran presence. Obviously, Gerald Everett would really fit the billing given his history with Liam Cohen.
He's already signed somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right.
But I'm with you, Matt. I totally understand what you're saying. I think that if the right player is there, and I think they like Sinnott. I don't know if they love Sinnott. I do. I think he's a hell of a tight end. He's probably the most complete tight end in this draft, not named Brock Bowers. I think if the right guy's there, they might take him. But the fact that they're going to be using less two tight end sets and almost be an exclusive three wide receiver, one tight end, which is that 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end pairing, tells me this team is probably going to prioritize drafting another wide receiver over a tight end. And there's a couple of tight ends to keep in mind late on day three, or maybe as undrafted free agents. Wesley, Culp from Washington. That's a kid to keep an eye on.
Of course, it's Washington.
Yes, and then also the other guy. I said Wesley. I meant I think it's Devin Culp. The other kid, and they had a formal interview with Devin Culp at the combine. The other kid to keep an eye on. They're bringing him for a top 30 visit, and that's Tip Ryman from Illinois. Ran a 4.64 at the combine, very athletic tight end. I shouldn't say athletic, more fast than athletic. Mm-hmm. But Devin Culp, very fast. I think he was the fastest tight end, 4.47 at the combine. Undersized, though, more of that Gerald Everett kind of move, receiving tight end. But those could be some guys to keep an eye on. I don't think that they're going to go tight end early. And I'm with you, Matt. I think they have got some guys, some young players they want to invest in. And I think really it's up to Cade Otten to hit the weight room, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Cade Otten and Payne Durham have got to hit the weight room and get stronger at the point of attack. They also will be aided by the fact that for two things. Number one, I think you're going to see a reduction in snap counts because you only have one tight end on the field. You can rotate those guys. So a less fatigued Cade Otten maybe gets more yards after the catch, maybe holds up better at the line of scrimmage.
Holds onto the damn ball when there's a defender on him.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the second thing is, and this kind of goes to, and I'd start this here. This is a good point. Last season was a terrible offensive line, no run blocking at all. And that was the other thing we kind of gleaned from talking with Liam Cohen and from Baker Mayfield last week at the facility was the fact that, well, they're going to be audibling a lot more. And that's something you didn't see the Bucks do a lot of last year. And you saw those stubborn runs. We saw those predictable first and 10. Here's the loaded box, and the Bucks get 2 yards, the second and 8. I think now you're going to see Baker Mayfield and this offense and the offensive linemen benefit from checking out of bad running plays, Matt. Sometimes this team ran into too many unfavorable looks, right? And sometimes when it's third and 6, you've got a passing play on, and man, the middle of the field's wide open. If you're Baker Mayfield,
run it.
Audible to a draw, right? Yeah. I mean, boom, hit him right up the middle and use a running play to get 8 yards on third and 6, right? So I think this running game is going to be aided by better play calling, not just by Liam Cohen, but by Baker Mayfield under center at the line of scrimmage, making those checks and audibles to more favorable running plays or opting out of a bad run into a good pass.
That's a lot that we talked about in season last season of just, there's a lot of things we liked about Dave Canales, but sometimes he wouldn't know when to rip the Band-Aid and kind of make those adjustments or make those audibles in this case. And there's another comment earlier, I believe it was from Narav, who talked about the sequencing of Dave Canales sometimes was a bit of an issue where, again, the experience of Liam Cohen at both the NFL and the collegiate level, the sequencing of plays, I think, could make all the difference for the Buccaneers, where you don't find too many of those third and short runs that don't convert, but just run plays that go nowhere. And then it's like, well, mm-hmm. that was a waste of a down right then and there with those plays. So yeah, there are ways to improve the run game without adjusting the personnel. Now the Bucs will be adjusting the personnel because obviously they're going to have a new left guard and everything we talked about on the offensive line on this show. Yeah. But there are other ways to help the run game besides, hey, they need another running back. They need a better blocking tight end and whatever the case may be.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And so I'm excited just to see some of these subtle changes. Personnel-wise, yes, you're going to get better and more talent through the draft, but schematically, right, going with
– yes.
I've always loved running out of a three-receiver set, right? Because you're running against more often than not nickel or dime defenses rather than a base defense. You're certainly not running against a short yardage or goal line defense. And if your offensive line is just not dominant, if you're not the Philadelphia Eagles,
correct,
help you out your offensive linemen by putting them in favorable formations, right? And I think the Rams have got a really good running game based upon how they run out of so many 3-by-1 sets. And you get that extra linebacker out of there, and now all of a sudden you get a nickel corner or you get an extra safety on the field. And I really think that the Bucs running game is going to be opened up from just a scheme and a personnel grouping style of play this year.
Yeah, for sure. We got another super chat from Mark Fisher, AKA Rev Fish, actually two super chats. But we'll start with Rev Fish, thanks for the super chat, $4.99, says, just got off of work. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Like our signings, but is this hurting what we can pay Tristan Wirfs this year? He's cheaper now than later.
No, they're gonna get a deal done. I think before the season starts with Tristan Wirfs, might be this offseason, this spring, might be this summer, might be in training camp, might be in the preseason, but they're going to get a deal done before I think the season kicks off. And Tristan Wirfs will be a happy man, and he will be the highest paid offensive tackle, I think, when it's all said and done. So these signings, we haven't seen the numbers come in yet in terms of how much these players are making, but I think it's probably under $3 million each. We're talking maybe Matt Filer type of money for Bredesen and for Opeta, you know, so we will see. We have a super chat here from Gabe Moreno, $4.99.
Yeah,
and,
thank you, Gabe.
Yep. And he says, can you see Liatu Latu, the UCLA edge rusher, falling to pick number 26? Can I see it happening? Yes, but I don't think it's going to, right? There's always somebody that falls, right? The Buccaneers did not think O.J. Howard, the tight end of Alabama would be there when he fell to them. Back in 2017.
Yeah, but I didn't think I didn't think Tristan Wirfs was going to be the fourth tackle off the board in his draft.
Well said. So I think that anything can happen. I don't think that's going to happen though. But one thing I do know for sure is if you do want your money to earn money, well, then call the folks over at Immuni Financial and talk with them because they can help you with your long-term and short-term investments.
At Immuni Financial, we help you live in the now.
Congratulations. We're so happy
for you. Thank you.
And even though the now may feel very different, you still need to plan for the future.
How's retirement treating you?
Oh, just fantastic.
I know I say it all the time, but you really got to come up to Colorado.
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah.
We can help you develop that plan to keep you on track so you can still prepare for tomorrow, today. Immuni Financial. Plan ahead. Stay ahead.
Managing your family's wealth means more to Immuni Financial than simply allocating your assets. It means legacy planning, brokerage and advisory services, retirement accounts, college savings accounts, and insurance services. With 40 years of experience, let Immuni Financial help you plan ahead and stay ahead. Give Immuni a call today at 1-800-868-6864 or visit them on the web at immuni.com. And while we're talking about businesses that can help you, I've got another one for you, folks. That's right. It's Eric Gross in the Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of Pewter Report. Now it's springtime, and it might be the time for you to buy or sell your home. So now is the time to trade or acquire, sign, draft, do whatever you can to get Eric Gross and your team. It takes a full team effort to win in real estate. It's the same way with football, right? You need to have the best players. Well, Eric is the best player when it comes to real estate market. He is a Tampa native. His father was stationed at MacDill Air Force Base. He's an avid Pewter Report reader. But more importantly, he and his team have the market knowledge, the top-notch communication skills, and the commitment to excellence that sets them apart. Their clients are not just transactions. They're lifelong friendships. Here's what I want you to do. Give Eric a call at 513-907-4271. Start talking some Tampa Bay football. Let the conversation start there. Then find out what Eric can do for you, whether you're in the market to buy or sell in the real estate market right now. Check out the website, HowsThisNFLA.com, HowsThisNFLA.com, or visit Eric Gross Group on Facebook or Instagram to check out their open houses and their inventory. No matter where you are on your home ownership journey, you're going to feel welcome with the Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of Pewter Report. Again, visit HowsThisNFLA.com.
Want to get to two comments real quick that I starred. Richie P. says, Bucks need to protect the investment. Pick an O-lineman in the first if JPJ or Barton is there. Okay. And Nathan Turpin says, pre-rolls plus Pewter Report TV equals life is good. Nathan, that is a great combination. Hope that we could help elevate your experience. And guys, we've had a great turnout today. The little number in the top corner says over 1,200 people are watching this show. That is absolutely fantastic. Cannot thank you enough. But if I could ask for a small request, just hit that like button. It takes 2 seconds. As quickly as I can go like this, boop. Thumbs up for those on audio. That's how quickly you can hit the like button and then still just enjoy the Pewter Report podcast without having to move anything else. Ready? Like.
That's it.
Like. Take. All right. We already
while
got
you're doing
there.
That, subscribe. Help us get to 14,000.
Yeah, we are getting very, very close. So, yeah, in the meantime, if you don't mind doing so, please like and subscribe to all of our social media on X, Facebook, and Instagram. We are at Pewter Report, and then our YouTube channel is Pewter Report TV. We got the podcast 4 times a week. We got various clips from press conferences and things in the Bucks facility during the season and other events out of the season, like the Combine we were just at recently, and we got other fun video and content coming out as well. Ooh. Tomorrow's show, big one on deck. It is the 7-round Bucks mock draft part 3. Scott Reynolds and Josh Capo have been cooking it up, getting it ready for reveal tomorrow, and we're going to break it all down on tomorrow's Pewter Report podcast at 4 p.m. Eastern time. I'm very excited. I haven't seen it yet, so I will be just as, not surprised, I guess, but I'll find out in live time like everyone else will. So very excited. Going to be a great show tomorrow, so make sure you tune in. That's going to do it for us on today's show. As Richie P says, looking forward to tomorrow. So am I.
Boy. And we got a
super chat. Martin Williams, thanks for the $4.99 super chat, says, do you think the offense takes a step back with the loss of Canales? I think a scheme was a difference in Baker's success. Canales had guys running open.
I think Liam Cohen's going to have some guys running wide open in his offensive scheme, too. I think the running game is going to take a step forward. I just like what I've heard from Liam Cohen so far. No disrespect to Dave Canales. Matt, I don't want to speak for you, but I think that Liam Cohen comes in with a little bit more play-calling experience. I think this offense is going to hit the ground running a little bit faster in 2024.
Yeah, if anything, I think it'll be better because Liam Cohen's just more polished as a play caller, and the offense is a little bit different, but not insanely different, where I don't think there's going to be a crazy learning curve. And some of the mistakes that we saw with Dave Canales, I don't think we'll see with Liam Cohen.
Yeah.
But you also have to remember, sure, there's going to be tweaks along the offensive line.
But continuity with Baker and Mike and Chris and Kate Otten.
Mayfield and Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield and Chris Godwin and all the other weapons they have. And we'll see what weapons they include in the draft. Maybe there will be one in Scott's mock draft tomorrow, which we'll be talking about on the show. So, for Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for another edition of the Pewter Report podcast. Out.
Out.